Welcome to Highway to Health. I'm Jeremy Quinby. This is episode 139 of the podcast. If you're new to the show, I want to welcome you. Highway to Health is your place for trusted health guidance and support. Whether you're looking to improve your health or just seeking ways to stay well, we're here for you. This growing community is on a mission to improve our state of being and experience together on the planet. And if you love the conversations and insight that you get here on the show, consider becoming a health amplifier. You can support the show for as little as the price of a cup of coffee by going to patreon.com/highwaytohealth. Your support is more helpful than you can imagine. And if you could take a moment to rate the show at some point, it will bring more awareness to the important topics that we cover here on the show. And if you have a few nice words to share, even better. So I finally got Dr. Krista Geisler on the show. We've talked about recording together for a few years, but this timing turned out to be perfect to include her for this season series on baby and maternal care and support. Krista has been in practice as a pediatric dentist for more than 20 years and in private practice for 13 of those. I became acquainted with her because she was one of the few pediatric dentists who treat newborns for tongue, lip, and cheek tie restrictions, which in the early stages of life can cause problems with nursing and feeding, not to mention a lot of discomfort for breastfeeding mothers. Navigating the decision-making process around tongue and lip ties is an unexpected stressor for new parents, and no one wants to put their baby through an unnecessary procedure. We also discuss the new wing of her practice called Release and Breathe Dentistry that has been informed by being in the mouths of so many kids. She shares with us why she moved into treating not just teeth, but also airway restriction issues. I'm so excited to learn more about this because I see a lot of problems with both adults and the children that I treat. And I know how important it is to intervene as early as possible to minimize health challenges down the road. Some great resources in this short episode. Please enjoy my conversation with Dr. Krista Geisler. So I don't know that much about your background as far as what got you interested in dentistry in the first place. I don't think as much as we've talked, I don't think I've ever asked you about this before.
It's not that great of a story, but I was always knew that I would go to college and get a degree in biology. That was like the only option. Everything else was not interesting. Okay. And I knew I wanted to have a doctorate of some type. And I thought about following my sister's footsteps. She's a microbiologist. She got a PhD, but worked in a lab one summer and found out that the test tubes don't talk back to you. You can't have real conversations with them. So it was right. A little too introverted for me. And one of the master's degree students was going on to dental school, and he said, you can work 4 days a week. And that sounded good to me. And so here I am, owning my own practice, working 5+ days a week. So,
of course.
So it lined up well. Yeah. And I'm thankful. I mean, we all have our different paths, but I do love what I do. So it wasn't something I've always wanted to do since I was 5 and went to the dentist. It's something that was a good career choice, and it fits me, suits me very well.
Yeah. Did you ever work for anybody else, for any other practice?
Oh, yeah. For 8 years, I was an associate in 3 different practices. First of all, we moved to Iowa City, and what is it called? Like when you just get your feet wet or something like that? Are you putting your dues in or something? It was kind of like that.
It's like a residency of sorts?
It wasn't a residency, but it threw me into the deep end pretty quick. Then we moved back to the Twin Cities, and I was at a practice for 4 years and learned to love technology and dentistry and some of the nicer things. Then I moved on to a practice to try to buy in and eventually open my own from scratch.
And did you go right into pediatric dentistry? Was that your interest?
You know, when I first, I was older when I had children. So in the beginning, I've been a dentist now for 21 years. I didn't understand kids that much. I don't know if I liked them that much, or maybe was that good with them. So I am a general dentist. I see a lot of kids, but I see adults too.
Okay.
But as you know, I've had my own children and I work with children. I'm much, much better with them. I somewhat sometimes understand them and can relate with them and work with them, which is great because that's more than half my population is very young.
Yeah. And so when did the baby work come along for you? And we're doing tongue tie release
Well, I got into it, honestly, with the birth of my second daughter, which was almost 10 years ago. She was born, you know, as soon as they lifted up and I looked at her, I'm like, whoa, she's got a tongue tie.
Mm.
And it was not on my radar at all. I said, well, you know, it just made sense that it would be difficult to breastfeed that baby. And I was given the advice in the hospital, just wait and see. I'm like, who even releases baby tongue ties? They're like, yeah. Oh, there might be a dentist in the Twin Cities. So it's totally off my radar. But then when you're struggling in the middle of the night with your own infant, you try to solve your problems, go online, my mind get blown, learn so many things.
Had you learned any of this in school? Like just how to detect tongue tie?
No. And I had released a couple tongue ties just because they were so severe, but I didn't know the extent of what I was doing. I didn't know what I wasn't doing to prepare the patient for it. So I knew about tongue ties, but generally tongues for dentists are just something that get in the way.
Right.
And we're checking for oral cancer.
Okay. That's
what I came out of school with. So, you know, this new students, new grads, they don't know anything about this.
Huh. So what were you finding online at that point when you were trying to look at your daughter's, you know, tongue?
Well, in this world, there's a well-known ENT, Bobby Gaheri, out in Oregon. And he is one of the few MDs who is very much a proponent of breastfeeding and releasing babies and has done quite a bit of research. So I found his blogs, his videos, learned how to do a release, and we released my baby without a laser because I didn't have a laser yet when she was, I think, 2 weeks old. And immediately the breastfeeding got better.
Yep.
I still didn't know all the things I should have been doing around it, surrounding it, body work or functional work.
Yeah.
So it wasn't 100% successful, but that was my launch into this.
Yeah. As you know, I got into this field too without really planning on working with pediatrics, but I had, as soon as I got into working with babies, I had a PT who was also a IBCLC, a lactation consultant, who just started coming to sessions all the time with the babies and mothers that she was working with. So she was sort of advising me on all of this, and she knew who all the pediatric dentists were who did this work. So, you know, it was all brand new to me, and it seemed like there were so many babies with it. But I guess the reason that most babies end up coming to see me is because they're having a lot of latch issues. And so, you know, sometimes I started realizing that there was a lot tied up around the neck and probably hyoid region. But, you know, as you kind of have on your website, which is, I really appreciate that you put all this on there, kind of the different symptoms that might go along with tongue tie. So what all the different symptoms are for babies and, or, you know, the signs that there may be tongue tie release, tongue tie restriction, besides just the obvious visual, because the posterior tongue issues are sort of harder to diagnose sometimes, or the cheek ties are harder to diagnose. So, and then also what tends to come up, you know, if babies, you know, does have a tongue tie, what might be happening with mom too, as far as what's happening with the breast. There may be, you know, some other, you know, infections that are happening from damage to the mother, that kind of stuff. So that's, you know, I'll make sure there are links to this so that anyone can go on there and see all this, because the list is long.
It is long, and not everybody has their own unique, like, set of symptoms.
Yeah. But that was, for me, that was all brand new. And also, you know, because I had been doing functional movement work with people for so long, it really clicked in with me, like, what might be the challenges functionally for a baby's, you know, tongue, neck, you know, area, since that's where most of the development is sort of happening with them when they're first born.
Right. Yeah. So that's how you and I first got introduced, because someone said, you need to meet this Jeremy guy. So that's how we met.
And I didn't, you know, when I was in Brooklyn, I didn't know that this was even like a field, you know, to work with, you know, in coordination with lactation support. But as soon as I got found out about it, the whole lactation world found out about me in Brooklyn, and it's just, you know, urban density. So suddenly I was doing, like, that became like a quarter of my practice within a very short period of time. So then I ended up with more experience than anybody else. And so when I moved to Minneapolis, a lot of people sort of knew about me, you know, in the certainly in the lactation support and OT world. So was it Dr. Lua that connected us, or somebody else?
There was a dentist who had a baby that I released, and she's friends with Dr. Lua, the prosthodontist. So she understood the connection of babies, release, you know, what you do for adults and fascia and pain. And
yeah.
So she made the connection.
Yeah. So how much of this do you see now in your practice, and what are kind of the first, like who leads people to you?
So my practice that I focus on tongue tie and airway and jaw growth and development, I've been doing it long enough that people are having their second and third baby, so that
I'm in the same place.
But chiropractors and body workers are fantastic at realizing there's something up.
Yeah.
IBCLCs and lactation consultants that are not in hospitals are great referral sources. There are less than five probably pediatricians that would refer to me, because it's controversial subject to many people
still, and also, I mean, frankly, pediatricians, it's not really their field of specialty. You know, they're not having to do that much work, really. You know, dealing with mothers and babies at the breast and looking at function of the tongue. Most of their work is sort of around, you know, vaccinations and head size and weight growth and all those kinds of things. So,
right. They need to know so much about so many things.
Yeah.
This is not a focus of many of them.
Yeah. So, I mean, for me, it's been, you know, my referrals tend to come from, you know, people like you or sometimes OTs, depending on, you know, what the challenges are, if there's been, especially with difficult birth. But then, you know, I'm in the same boat with, the lactation consultants tend to be who send babies to me the most, and then sort of the revisits of if I've treated their babies before, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's great to see them. You know, how is Johnny doing? Oh, he's doing great. We've fed for 2 years afterwards, and he's growing and thriving. So it's always neat to check in with those people.
Yeah, and I think we learned something too, don't you think, from the people who's, if they've had kids with challenges before, we kind of have a pretty good sense of, you know, just genetically, there are sometimes just structural things that are very similar between kids too.
Yeah. Yep. We take photos of all the oral tissues, and it's interesting because sometimes you wouldn't be able to tell Johnny's from Sarah's, in the same family.
So. Right. So can you explain a little bit about what's the difference between a posterior and anterior tongue tie?
Yeah. So an anterior tongue tie is tied close to the tip or within millimeters of the tip. And when someone's crying, you might see a heart shape or a notch in the tip of the tongue.
Mm-hmm.
And generally they're really thin, like a guitar string, and generally attach right into the mandible or the lower jaw, the gums where your teeth will be coming in.
Mm-hmm.
So those are more classically, and that was, you know, in the past decades when they did research, that's all they were looking for. So the prevalence of tongue ties was only looked at for anterior ties. So those are pretty severe in the fact that they restrict side-to-side movement and elevation. That being said, I see some babies that are tied to the tip and that are functioning beautifully, or the dyad is compensating beautifully. And then there are babies that come in with what we call a posterior tie. So it's still under the tongue in the midline, the floor of the mouth, just doesn't insert so close to the tip of the tongue. So it might insert into the middle third of the blade of the tongue or the back third. And you have to do a maneuver from the 12 o'clock position with your fingers in the baby's mouth and looking from behind them to actually, assess a tongue tie.
Yeah. And is there a reason for addressing it early versus waiting, in your opinion?
Yeah, I always tell people you want to do it as early as possible, as long as the family is ready, the baby is ready. And I mean that by, you know, has functional support, been working on that, has had body work, has support. The younger they release, the higher the chance mom will continue to breastfeed if that was going on.
Right.
They can relearn how to use their, you know, tongue easier. easier for the parents to do the aftercare. They thrive a lot better and they can just get in a good path. Mom's milk supply isn't as damaged. Mom doesn't have mastitis as often.
Right.
And baby doesn't have to, you know, get over such bad habits or postures or functions and relearn how to do things.
And what do you think are the consequences of not addressing it besides those things, kind of more long term?
Yeah. They've done research and children who have a tongue tie have a much higher prevalence of pediatric sleep apnea. And for adults and children, the distance from kind of the base of their skull to the front of the bone underneath your nose is a smaller number. So their upper jaw is more retracted in their face, which is always an airway concern. Mm-hmm. There's not as much research about speech. They're coming out with that. But there has been some research of after release that it's improving speech, improving swallowing and eating. When you think about when you have a tongue tie, you have a tongue posture that's low and really predisposes that person to mouth breathing. Mm-hmm. And when you mouth breathe, your entire cranial facial complex grows in a different way, kind of in a vertical way, a long way, long, narrow face, smaller, higher palate, difficult to breathe through your nose. So more inflammation in the back of the nose and the throat. Unable to keep your teeth clean if you can't lick the sides of your teeth. So higher risk of cavities. There's a lot of self-confidence issues when kids can't speak well. So
yeah.
Those are some of them. I could probably go on and on. So
yeah, there's a lot. And we've done a little work together with adults with the same issues. And, you know, it's always interesting to me when I have a baby in the room where I can clearly tell one of the parents has either, you know, tongue mm-hmm. or cheek or lip tie or something.
Or all of them.
But, you know, sometimes, you know, we can sort of tell from the front teeth, right? That's an obvious mm-hmm. one with mm-hmm. the sort of lip stuff. But you know, it's an easy call in those situations. But if neither of the parents had challenges with that, it's sometimes harder to convince a parent to do the release. And that's always, you know, I feel like what tends to happen is they find out about it. Sometimes it's not bad enough. And I heard there's a lactation consultant who came up with a kind of a good way of thinking about the difference in intentions between these different ties, because we're basically talking about fascia, which is what I'm kind of, you know, working with mm-hmm. craniosacral work all the time. And she described it as, you know, the more functional tongue ties, you know, or the ones that are borderline tend to be more like the pink rubber band, like around a container of blueberries, whereas the ones that definitely need releasing are kind of more like the purple rubber band around asparagus.
Yeah, the thick ones.
The thick one, right? So it's really about density, and sometimes you can really feel it, or you can kind of just see the lack of movement in the mouth. But you know, as your list kind of stated, a lot of the things that we're looking for, or you know, that kind of clue us in, are like clicking, milk leaking out of the mouth, you know, the little blister that starts on the lips, you mm-hmm. know, especially the upper lip, and just that sort of tightness all around the mouth will look really pursed. The jaw will seem really tight.
Right.
Those that long nursing sessions that are just where the baby doesn't seem to be getting anything. And, you know, this is one of those things that, you know, I think it's very helpful in these situations to have a lactation consultant, because they will also weigh the baby before and after feedings mm-hmm. to really check and see how much they're getting. And they can kind of track that over the course of a couple sessions.
Right. And tongue ties aren't all there is with breastfeeding. There's a lot of other things that need to be optimized as well and supported. So.
Right.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Which is, I think, where you have a pretty good instinct, it seems, for who needs to come see me. And I think a lot of times it is, you can sort of tell by the posture, you know, the head will be, you know, a little rotated and kind of locked into a position. It may be a torticollis, or it may just be sort of a position that they've gotten kind of stuck in a little bit too. It could have even been in a utero position where they were kind of, you know, in that position for a really long time if they were a big baby, you know, towards mm-hmm. towards the end. And you know, sometimes it's just like the state of the child. I'd say, you know, you can sort of tell when babies are just really having a hard time, if they've been struggling for, you know, a period of time. I'm sort of selling my services now, but that's sort of where it becomes helpful, just to kind of get them to settle so that they can focus back on the task at hand, especially after they've had a tongue tie release. Cause you know, I don't know how stressful it is for babies, but I think that they feed a lot off of how stressful it is for the parents.
Yeah,
don't you think?
And they're in the protect mode after a release, so
yeah, for sure.
You learn and grow and change your habits when you're trying to protect yourself at the same time. So
yeah.
Getting that autonomic nervous system regulated as best you can before the procedures, if there are procedures to be done, is key. So
yeah. So tell me what's changing now that with, you know, with your practice, and your experience, and I know some of it is personal and some of the stuff has probably also been led by your children, but your understanding, and I know you've been just kind of really digging into studying and taking courses and going to conferences around airway restriction and how to manage that, which I think is a huge issue across the board for, you know, kids and adults. I start treating kids a lot with this. But what are you finding that's gotten you more interested in that? And how are you working with that population now?
Well, not only with the infants, but when they become, you know, toddlers and preschoolers are still struggling with low tongue posture, you know, bedwetting, all sorts of, you know, facial growth and development, you know, sucking their thumb. So there's so many things that are related to this. And so the cool thing that I'm, you know, really digging into is, besides doing the infant releases and supporting them, is doing early interceptive orthodontics, or kind of guiding the jaw to grow or catch up to the spot that it should be at that age, because we have certain measurements now that we know, that we can improve function. There's some new research out that doing rapid palatal expansion, which is, you know, controversial in itself, but can reduce the size of tonsils and adenoids because you're widening, you know, that base and reducing inflammation. So a non-surgical approach to inflamed tissue. So I'm really getting into treating kids as young as I possibly, as young as they'll let me. We have like 3-year-olds.
Okay.
Trying to put some like not as invasive as possible little appliances in there, and they catch up really quick. They're giving me good feedback that they can breathe. When a 3-year-old tells you, "Hey, I have holes in my nose, I can breathe through my nose," you know, not prompted, you know, you're doing something right.
Yeah. How do you catch it, or how do the parents catch it? Are you catching it in dentistry or?
50-50. So half of the patients I see are in release and breathe, and they know about tongue ties. We kind of let them know that we need and so we're doing exams at age 1 and every 6 months afterwards. So we take pictures and measurements and we say, your child's jaw hasn't grown to its full potential. There's mouth breathing. We bring in other specialists as we can. But so half of them are already kind of like, I would call them airway patients. And the other half are people who just come in because their kid needs their first cleaning and exam, and they come in. They tend to get a little overwhelmed. I try to tiptoe into the subject because they don't know their child had a tongue tie. So about half and half, half of them, I'm the one to find it, and the other half are already airway conscious.
Okay. And so is this now kind of like a separate wing of your practice where people know they can have that evaluation done with you?
Yeah. I split my practice, Life Smiles, where I was doing probably a third of my work was with infants and adults with tongue ties and airway and orthodontics. And I split it into two practices. So my newer practice called Release and Breathe, it's in the same location. I'm doing the same work, but it's allowing me to kind of dive deeper into those kind of special type of procedures and practices, and then my general practice is separate. And I think it's a launching pad for me to maybe differentiate those two practices and maybe bring other people on board and a different business that's not working with dental insurance. You can do some more, you know, free things, not free for just it frees you up to not be inhibited by, you know, what
by
insurance
just dentistry.
Yeah.
So how is that, if I can ask, how is that covered then as far as insurance is concerned for evaluations?
So a lot of people have, for the infants and adults, they submit to their own medical insurance, and a lot of times it's covered. And for the orthodontics, they can submit it again to their own dental, but some of the dental plans don't cover orthodontics for like 3-4 year olds, and they have a lifetime max of, let's say, $2,000. So okay. We let the parents deal with their insurance, and we get paid directly, which keeps me from, you know, turning my practice into a factory and doing the cheapest stuff, because right. insurance, you know, takes such a big cut that you can't spend as much time with your patients. You can't do quality stuff.
So. Yeah. Yeah. And is there anybody else in our area in Minneapolis doing the airway restriction?
Diagnosis? Quite a few. It's gaining quite a bit. I'm part of an airway study club where there's a lot of dentists in it, and it's involving body workers, chiropractors, speech people, a lot of speech people. So there are quite a few people in the Twin Cities.
That's really cool. I didn't know that was, I mean, and because it's such a huge thing, I do work with a few different people who do, like, it tends to be more with older adults who, you know, there's that other tipping point somewhere around the 40s where, you know, people start having trouble with apnea. But I don't see this stuff being addressed that I haven't in the past seen this stuff addressed at such an early age, but I feel like it's a much smarter way to go, which is, you know, I mean, that's the reason I got into working with babies. I felt like if you start addressing some of those kinds of, you know, structural issues that are going on, functional issues that are happening with them at an early age, they'll basically grow out of them. My belief, I think you kind of feel the same way, is that the body sort of knows the balance that it's looking for, but sometimes kind of gets stuck in a process or stuck with a, mm-hmm. you know, something structural that happens at a young age.
And it's interesting it's great when they just thrive afterwards. Adults, right. We have a lot more, things are a little bit more deeply seated.
It's a longer path. I know that. I mean, mm-hmm. that's really what got me hooked on baby work. I wasn't really planning on it. I had a midwife who was, you know, kept pushing me and saying, oh, you know, your work would be really helpful for this and for that. And, you know, I had just started a business and had, you know, I was doing movement work with people and body work with them. And then she just asked me to do an evaluation for a baby who they wanted to put into a cranial cap because the cranials were really asymmetrical and one of the eyes wasn't opening very well. And so I just, you know, kind of, you know, did the evaluation for her and kind of felt around, told her what I noticed. But you're kind of moving with tissue and kind of trying to get a sense of how it's holding its patterns. And apparently that was enough, you know, because babies' systems are so open, that was enough to just kind of get things moving. And then they go through a growth, you know, spurt every few days. And they sent me a picture the next week of the eye. It looked totally different.
That is so cool.
And then I got hooked. You know, that was because, you know, as we were just saying, like I had been working with adults with sort of chronic hip and neck and back problems for, you know, at least 10 years at that point. And those, you know, some of those people, you're going to work with them for 3 to 6 months to get them on track. But then, you know, you see a baby go through something in a session or two, and it's like kind of unbelievable.
Yeah. Gratification right there.
But it teaches you so much about how the body also functions too.
Yeah, it does.
Well, this is cool. I'm so excited to see you moving in this direction. I started to get a glimpse of it maybe like 5 years ago or something. And so you are fully in now.
Yeah, and it's hard to not be in. I think about what would it be like if I gave up the airway and the tongue tie. It'd be so boring, and I'd have a hard time being an employee someplace where I'm not allowed to talk about this or treat it. So, it's and the awareness, and you know, social media is people become more aware of things on social media. So there's talk about it online. So
yeah. And I think, you know, this is an important part of having a career in a health field too, I think, is just having the ability to stay open to what you really see and not just get into that rut of just, you know, the siloed approach of just like, this is my specialty, this is all I do, this is all I focus on. Because it's so limiting, actually, I think, in terms of like how you can look at somebody as a whole and realize like, oh, I can help them in other ways that are going to benefit the way they feel long-term.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I went from being a tooth doctor to a health-based doctor who just happens to focus on the lower half of your face. So yeah. Much more fulfilling to be able to look at people as a whole person.
Yeah. And because I think it makes sense too. You go all in on one thing and you get thousands of hours of experience on that one thing. that stuff is pretty easy for you. So then, you know, all of a sudden it's almost inevitable that you're going to, you know, going to become a little broader because you're trying to solve some problem related to that area. And then all of a sudden you see this other system that you kind of have an instinct about.
Right, right. It's just natural to lead in the tongue tie, let into the airway, to sleep, jaw growth and development. And it's just a natural progression. I'm learning all the time. So.
So cool, Krista. Well, thank you for taking the time. I know you're busy and this took a while for us to make happen. But
yeah,
so
sorry
cool.
About that. Jeremy, thank you for the work you do with these people and for your podcast. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks, Krista. Dr. Krista Geisler, folks. This is one of the many conversations we've had over the years. She's one of the more curious minds I've run into in my career, and it gives me great joy to see her building her care practice the way she has. Having seen her exploring different avenues, probing my brain and the minds of other colleagues, and taking in all of her experience and settling into a new way of practicing that seems to be energizing for her. It's such an important thing to continue to cultivate new interests throughout one's life and career, so I'm just so thrilled for her. Let me know what you thought of this topic in conversation. You can reach out to me anytime at jeremy@highway2.health. Thanks for listening and for all that you do. Be good to yourself, be kind to each other, and take care of your planet. Be well, my friends.